Corporation, world's largest radio manufacturer, presents your Radio Hall of Fame. Each week, for one full hour, the stars made great by your recognition of their achievements are brought to you by Philco Corporation, makers today of radar and electronic equipment to help win the war, makers tomorrow of products for good living in a world at peace. This afternoon, your Radio Hall of Fame pays tribute to Victor Borga, Georgia Gibbs, the cast of A Bell for Adano, and as usual, Paul Whiteman, the orchestra and chorus. Your master of ceremonies is a personality whose performances in the field of entertainment are unquestionably of superlative quality. He has won the highest accolade in motion pictures, the Academy Award. Some of the films in which he has appeared, such as Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and A Star is Born, are silver screen gems. The play in which he last starred on Broadway, The Skin of Our Teeth, won the Pulitzer Prize. His current vehicle, A Bell for Adano, part of which will be enacted on today's program, has won critical huzzas. Philco proudly presents Frederick March.
Thank you. Thank you, Glenn Riggs. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for doing me the honor of letting me conduct you on this afternoon's journey through your Radio Hall of Fame. And now I'm going to start off with a little quiz. What's the principal product of Texas?
Beef.
Florida?
Grapefruit.
Georgia?
Gibbs.
Ha-ha. He's referring, of course, to Georgia Gibbs, one of radio's most talented songbirds, who actually comes from Worcester, Massachusetts. Just shows you what you'll do to get a little novelty into an introduction. You've honored Miss Gibbs this afternoon because of her outstanding performances on the Jimmy Durante, Gary Moore show, where she appears every Friday night for Camel Cigarettes, and because she sings sweet, swing, blues, and torch songs equally well, a rarity. She is a special favorite of yours, as indicated by her very high standing in the various radio popularity polls. All this is enough for Philco to present her nibs, Miss Gibbs. What's it going to be, Georgia?
Well, I'd like to sing that Jerome classic from Showboat, Can't Help Loving That Man. He's lazy, or tell me he's slow.
Yeah, tell me I'm crazy. Maybe I know I can't help loving that man of mine. Now when he goes away, that's a rainy day. And when he comes back, that day is can be home without you. Ain't no home to me. I can't help loving that man of mine.
Georgia Gibbs can't help loving that man, and it looks like Glenn Riggs can't help being very fond of a phonograph.
That's right, Mr. March. You may have noticed in listening to your Radio Hall of Fame that each guest star is a leader in some special form of entertainment, whether it's comedy, drama, or singing the blues. And in this age of specialists, it's no wonder that you'll find a great many specialized talents among the men who will create your new Philco radio or radio phonograph. For instance, take cabinet design. Philco has a remarkable group of industrial designers, expert in utilizing all the marvelous new materials, plastics, light metals, fabrics, and wood finishes. These designers have a brilliant record. One example is the Philco tilt front cabinet that brought entirely new convenience to the operation of the modern radio phonograph. After victory, these Philco designers will bring you a new line of cabinets more beautiful than any you've ever seen. You'll choose the model that matches your furnishings, and all your friends will admire it. Similarly, Philco electronic engineers will bring you the latest developments for greater beauty of tone and more powerful performance. And Philco mechanical experts will provide ingenious new features to make your new radio or phonograph easier and more enjoyable to operate. Yes, thanks to the work of many different specialists, your new Philco will be the finest ever built. And produced by the world's largest radio manufacturer, it will also be the best value your money can buy.
Mr. Victor Borge, formerly of Denmark, enters your Philco Radio Hall of Fame to the accompaniment of music and laughter. Music, since he is a brilliant pianist, and laughter, for he is a superb comic, as you found when he lent the attic salt of his wit to the Bing Crosby program, of which he was so long a welcome guest. He is certainly one of the most original satirists of the day. In addition to his success in radio, he has been hailed as one of the brightest phenomena to appear on the cafe scene in years. To be or not to be in your Radio Hall of Fame was never a cause of controversy in the case of this artist. You knew he belonged. So Philco pays heed and presents the unmelancholy Dane, Victor Borge. Victor, when it was announced on our program last week that you were to appear on the Radio Hall of Fame today, we were flooded by requests that you explain the inflationary language which you originated.
Well, it's regarding, see, I'm not at the piano right now, so that's why I would like to talk. And this little invention of mine, the inflationary language, I will have to explain why I invented it, of course. See, some people say we have inflation now, and some people say we don't. And other people say we will have inflation, and some people say we won't. And that's exactly how it is right now. See, I have prepared myself with an inflationary language in case we should have inflation, because I think it is better to be prepared for an inflation that doesn't come than to not to be prepared for an inflation that comes. Of course, this is strictly my own opinion and doesn't necessarily the Hall of Fame. So you have probably noticed that many words contain numbers. For instance, the word wonderful. There we have number one. In order to get this inflationary language to work, we just add one to each of these numbers. And when we talk with that addition, then we will have the inflationary language. This is very simple. For instance, wonderful will be tutiful. As well as before will be five. Forever will be five ever. And so on and so on. Now take a word like create. That should be crinine. And a tennis will be a Levinis, of course. As well as a lieutenant will be a little Levenant. behalf, of course, will be one and a half. You might like to hear how a whole sentence would sound if used with this inflationary language. Now, take a sentence like, I ate a tenderloin with my fork. I ate a tenderloin with my fork. That'll be, I nined an 11-loin with my five. So easy. I brought a little book along, and I would like to read just a little chapter out of this book. Not a chapter, of course, just a little passage, sure. So you can hear how this sounds. The book's title is All This and Heaven 3. And it's published by Triple Day Doran. And I can take any passage. It doesn't have to be necessarily absolutely something I have. Well, here's something. He says, oh, I hate you, you... Oh, I better take another one. Here's something. Ah, he said as he wiped his five head. You look tutiful 3 nights, darling. You are my two and only. I have never felt this way before. Anna really looked tutiful in spite of her illness, from which she had not yet recuperated. She had just been released from the famous institution, where her father had worked since she had seen the light of day for the second time. The table in front of them was bathed in such moonlight as can only be in Southern California. And violins in the ballroom could be heard playing softly their favorite song, T-5-3. Oh, I hate to see you leave next Thursday, darling. She said, elevenderly. While she took a bite of the marinated herring in front of her. Suddenly footsteps were heard, and there, in the bright moonlight, stood her one-and-a-half brother. Obviously intoxicated. Who are you, and what are you doing with my one-and-a-half sister, he shouted. Anna replied indignantly, Bob, you are talking to my fiancé, who has just been promoted to a third little Levenant in the Army Air Forces. But Bob just said sarcastically, are you two? I am 2-3. That means, are you one? I'm 1-2. And I take the opportunity to congratulate both of you, whereupon he walked away saying, this is the finish, Anna, between you and me. I'm leaving you five ever and ever. Goodbye, Anna. Twiddle-loo, twiddle-loo. Now we've had a little fun, I come to something a little more serious. Years ago, I first heard the Rhapsody in Blue when I was in Denmark. I liked it. Then and there, it became my ambition to someday play the Rhapsody in Blue with the man who commissioned George Gershwin to write it and who first performed it. Today I'm gratifying that ambition as I play an excerpt from the Rhapsody in Blue with the magnificent Paul Whiteman and his equally magnificent orchestra.
When a person who has been on the show earlier returns to sing a second number, what can you say about her? You've already given her a well-deserved build-up when she did her first selection. Nothing of importance has happened to her between her first song and her second. So practically anything I say more than that Georgia Gibbs is going to sing the trolley song is just a waste of time. So why waste it? Sing, Georgia, sing.
With my high-starched collar and my high-starched shoes and my hair piled high upon my head, I went to lose a jolly hour on the trolley and lost my heart instead. With his light brown derby and his bright green tie, he was quite the handsomest of men. I started to yen, so I counted to ten, then I counted to ten again. Clang, clang, clang went the trolley. Ding, ding, ding went the bell. Zing, zing, zing went my heartstrings. For the moment I saw him, I fell. Chug, chug, chug went the motor. Bump, bump, bump went the brake. Bump, bump, bump went my heartstrings. When he smiled, I could feel the car shake. He tipped his hat and took a seat. He said he hoped he hadn't stepped upon my feet. He asked my name, I held my breath. I couldn't speak because he scared me half to death. Buzz, buzz, buzz went the buzzer. Plop, plop, plop went the wheels. Stop, stop, stop went my heartstrings. As he started to go, then I started to know how it feels. Where the universe reels. Buzz, buzz, buzz went the buzzer. Plop, plop, plop went the wheels. Stop, stop, stop went my heartstrings. As he started to leave, I took hold of his sleeve with my hand. And as if it were planned, he stayed on with me and it was grand just to stand with his hand holding on to the end of the line.
One of the most important and powerful books to come out of this war is certainly John Hersey's great novel, A Bell for Adano. Long on the bestseller lists, this moving story of the American occupation of a small Italian town will soon reach an even wider audience. Not only are plans being made for filming this book, but this coming week, on Wednesday, December 6th to be exact, the stage play will open on Broadway. Because out-of-town critics have given it and Frederick March in the starring role such outstanding acclaim, your Radio Hall of Fame departs today from its usual traditions and brings you, even before it opens in New York, the first scene of Paul Osborne's stage version of A Bell for Adano. The scene is the former office of the mayor in the city hall of Adano, Italy. The office is huge, the furniture of the heavy black Italian kind. On the wall, photographs and paintings of the Italian royal family, as well as a romantic oil painting of a group of men pointing into the distance. There's a balcony opening on a window in back. Throne-like chairs, various tables, and a massive desk are about the room. It's a fantastic room, rather overpowering, comic yet impressive. The large doors of the office open slowly, and in comes Major Victor Joppolo. He is about 35 and wears the uniform of an American major and carries a briefcase. Behind him is Sergeant Leonard Borth, an MP.
Well, what do you know?
Some layout, huh?
I'll say. Look at that chair.
Yeah, and the floor. Marble.
Should have brought our roller skates.
These fascist boys sure did themselves right.
Little different from the streets we just came through. Wonder whose office this was.
Well, this is the city hall. It must have been the mayor's. Can you imagine what Mussolini's must have been like?
Yeah.
Say, how will you like being a Mussolini here in Adano, Major?
Cut the kidding, boss. Come on, let's look around. Yeah. Aerial photos, maps all over this table. Hey, that's a nice painting on the wall. Wonder how old it is.
There's been a field telephone here. Some of our boys must have used this as a command post during the invasion this morning.
Maybe it's by somebody famous. The Italians have had some good artists, you know, boss.
Still at it, huh?
At what?
Getting sentimental. Your job is to clean up the streets of this town, Major. Get it in order.
I know my job, boss. I know what I want to do here. It's so quiet. Where is everybody?
Fled to the hills. I guess those that didn't are still in hiding.
How do we get them out? How do we show them where they're friends?
Friends?
Well, what do you think? What do you think we're here for?
Why, to clean up the streets, Major.
Look, boss, you remember that dead Sicilian woman in the alley as we came up just now? Shot this morning in the invasion?
Yeah.
You think she was an enemy of ours?
No.
My grandmother must have been like her. She came from a little Italian town like this, near Florence. Ah, those aren't the ones we're after. This bunch of crooks that were here in the city hall.
Careful, Major. Now you're in the city hall. Maybe you'll turn out to be a crook.
That's nothing to kid about, boss.
Yes, sir.
Come on, let's look around. Let's see what's in this other office.
Hey, look at these files.
Yeah.
Boy, this is okay. Nothing emptied, not even touched. I sure left in a hurry this morning. Names, names, names. Everybody in Adano, all their records. Yeah, this will make my job easy. I can weed out all the bad ones and... Hey, here's another office.
Yeah?
More files. Looks like there might be a whole string of offices back there. Major Giampolo.
Yeah?
This office would be pretty convenient for Captain Purvis in charge of MP here with all these files. Would you mind if I told him about it?
Oh, it's a good idea. Too bad it's so small, though. What a difference between this office and mine.
Your office?
In there, I mean.
Careful, Major. That's a big office. You could get lost in there. Hey, you! Come on out of there!
Welcome to Americans. Live Roosevelt! I've always hated the fascists. Welcome to Americans. Live Roosevelt!
Where'd you come from?
I've been waiting for the Americans.
Who are you?
Vito Giovanni. I've been well known as anti-fascist.
What do you do?
I greet Americans. Live Roosevelt!
Oh, no, you idiot. I mean, what was your job here before the invasion?
Vito Giovanni. Usher in the city hall. Native of Adano.
You were usher here?
Every day. 8 to 8.
I see. Well, why did you work for the fascists if you hated them?
I have hated them for years. I am well known as anti-fascist.
They knew you were anti-fascist. And yet they kept you as usher here in the city hall.
Yes, Vito Giovanni.
Look, usher, I love the truth. If you lie to me, you'll be in very serious trouble. Do not lie to me. If you were a fascist, you were a fascist. There's no need to lie.
One had to weep. One had to earn a living. I have 6 children.
That I can understand. So you were a fascist. Very well, now you'll have to learn to live in a democracy. You'll be my usher.
Yes, live Roosevelt!
Don't give me that fascist salute.
No.
And don't bow either. There's no need to grovel here. I'm only a major. Fourth here's a sergeant. Are you a man?
No, sir. Yes, sir.
You can welcome me by shaking my hand. You can welcome Sergeant Bort in the same way.
Yes, sir, Mr. Major. Yes, sir.
Look, Zito, what condition is the town in? Has it been bad here?
Oh, we've been bombed and bombed.
Yeah.
For 3 days we've had no bread. The stink of the dead is very bad. Some people are sick because the drivers of the water carts have been afraid to get water for several days because of the planes along the road. And our bell is gone.
Your bell?
Yes, Mr. Major. It was 700 years old. It rang with a good tone each quarter hour. Mussolini took it.
Oh, yeah?
He took it to make rifle barrels. The town was very angry when we lost the bell. Only 2 weeks before you came. Why didn't you come sooner?
Where was this bell?
Up there, on the top of this building. The whole building tingled when it rang.
Well, there's nothing we can do about that now. Look, Vito, I want to speak to the priest of this town. Will you get him for me?
Which priest, Mr. Major? In Adano, there are 13 churches, and some are 2 or 3 priests.
Well, which church is best?
And churches ought not to be a good and a bad, but San Angelo is the best, because Father Pensavecchio is the best of all.
Will you ask him if he can come here, Zito?
Yes, sir, Mr. Major. He's just around the corner.
Now cut out that fascist salute.
Yes, sir, Mr. Major. Forget the Mr. Major. I'm anti-fascist, Mr. Major. Welcome to Americans. Leave it, Roosevelt. I'll get Father Pensavecchio right away.
Careful, Major. You'll be shaking everybody's hand in Adano.
Yeah, that was a mistake. Probably just the first of many.
Look, sir, do you mind if I go find Captain Purvis and tell him about these offices?
Oh, go ahead. I'll get at this desk and start cleaning it up.
Those files will be a big help to us. We'll be able to tell who's for us and who's against us. How does it feel sitting there at that big desk, Ducci?
Oh, I don't know. So much to do, I hardly know where to begin. Hand me that briefcase, will you?
Yes, sir.
Listen to the instructions they give us. Instructions to civil affairs officers. First day. Enter the city with the first column. Place guards and seize all records. Place all food warehouses, enemy food dumps, wholesale food concerns, and other major food stocks under guard. There's not even any bread. See that the following establishments are placed under guard or protection. Foundries, machine shops, electrical works, chemical plants, flour mills, breweries, cement plants, refrigeration plants, ice plants, warehouses.
They must have thought we were invading Chicago. Just clean up the streets, Major. So long.
Oh, wait a minute, Sergeant. Take this American and this British flag and hang them from the poles outside the window, huh?
Okay, Major.
Notes to Joppolo from Joppolo. Don't let the red tape get you down. Always be accessible to the public. Don't play favorites. Don't lose your temper. When plans fall down, improvise. Improvise, huh? Well, we'll see. Come in.
You pull up the flag. War is over here in Adana, eh?
Yeah, who are you?
I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. I've been here 3 years. You got to wait for me?
Hello. Wait till I close these balcony windows. Where'd all these people suddenly come from?
Oh, they're hiding. They're watching. They see the flag and they feel better.
What's your name?
Ribaldi Giuseppe. In Cleveland, they call me Joe.
What can you do?
Oh, I'm a good American. I hate this fascist. I could do a good job for you.
You're such a good American. Why'd you leave the States?
They kicked me out.
Well, why?
I'm an open support.
Well, how'd you get in then?
Oh, influence. I got very smart friends in Cleveland, in Buffalo.
Look, you got into the States illegally.
Yes, boss.
And they caught you and kicked you out.
Yes, boss.
Okay, I'll hire you.
Huh? You like I get the kick out, boss?
I like that you tell me the truth.
Sure, boss.
How well do you know these people, Giuseppe? How do you think you can help me? What does this town need most?
I could go for a movie house.
Oh, yeah. I mean right now.
Oh, food, boss. 3 days, lots of people no eat nothing. Everyone been scared. Bakers don't work. Nobody sells pasta. Water no come in the cars. Fishermen, they no fish.
Huh? Okay, Giuseppe, we'll see what we...
I open them up, boss.
Yeah, please.
My name is Cacopardo. At your service, Mr. Major. Craxi, my name. I am 62. 44, me. I own most of the sulfurs in this place. Here, Cacopardo is sulfur, and sulfur is Cacopardo. I wish to give you advice.
Also, a telegram to send for me. And important advices I have to give you.
Oh, advices, yes, are of no importance.
Advices I have are of the greatest importance. The people are hungry. They must eat.
Oh, it's nonsense. The bell. That is what they need more than anything.
Foolishness, the bell. More than anything, to eat is necessary.
The town needs its bell back. Always you can eat.
Always you can eat. You, Cacopardo, you have 1,000,000 lire. You sulfur. You can always eat. But not all the people here can eat.
You think only of your stomach. The spirit is more important than the stomach. The bell was of our spirit. It was of our history.
All right, that's enough. You say you're coming to give me advice.
Also a telegram to send for me.
Yeah, well, this is no telegraph office. Now, I know the people are hungry. And I wish to relieve the situation as quickly as possible. If you have any practical ideas...
That's right, Mr. Major. Anyhow, the people who are hungry have a ringing in their ears. They have no need for bells. By this bell, the people who were warned to...
All right, that's enough, I tell you.
Major Joplin.
Yeah, yeah, what is it?
Captain Purvis, sir.
Oh, hello, Purvis.
How are you, Major? I've been looking over the offices. There are four or five of them. Sure you have no objection to my setting up headquarters here?
Oh, go ahead.
I'll be right here where you can reach me.
Okay, fine.
Anything you'd like me to do now, sir?
No, thanks. No, I'm just getting organized.
Okay, I'll be seeing you.
Right.
Hey, Mr. Major. Father Pensavecchio, is he coming?
Oh, good. Good. Now, I'm very busy, gentlemen. If you have anything else...
Oh, but Mr. Major, the bell. Oh, the bell will give life back to the people.
Yeah.
When it spoke to us. And our fathers, and their fathers speak to us.
No, the bell, she rang nice and loud.
No, it was because it rang the time of day.
No, it was the tone of the bell. It soothed all the people of this town.
It was its history.
No,
it tells what to do things such as eating.
No, it had a tone for everybody.
Oh, it rang every
Quiet. I've heard all I want to about the bell. I mean, there are more important things to be done here, you understand? But if anyone says the word bell again in this office, come in. Oh. Thank you for coming, Father. I am Major Victor Joplo of the United States Army, Senior Civil Affairs Officer for the town of Adano.
I know.
I represent AMG, Allied Military Government of Occupied Territory.
Welcome to Adano, Major.
Thank you, Father. I've been trying to get the ideas of various people as to what's the first thing to be done for the town. I know the people are hungry, and the streets must be cleaned. There are so many things.
Yes, there are many things. Also, of the gravest importance, Major, is the matter of the bell.
Oh, yes, I've heard something about the bell, Father.
You see, this bell was the center of the town. Even we, in the churches, depended on this bell more than on our own. At noon, on the Sabbath, when all the bells in town rang at once, this bell rose above all the others, and that was the one you listened to. The bell regulated and gave meaning to the life in this town.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thank you all very much for your advice, and I'll keep the bell in mind. And now I wish to speak alone with Father Pensavecchio.
Thank you, Mr. Major. You are very kind, Mr. Major.
Oh, Mr. Major, the telegram.
Oh, yes. I'll try to send it.
Ah, it is to your President Roosevelt. It is with my congratulations. And it is to say that I am crazy with joy for our liberty so long awaited. And to give him my sincere gratitude and recognition. Well,
thank you. Thank you. The President will be glad to hear.
Thank you, Mr. Major. I kiss your hand.
I'd like to talk to you very seriously for a moment, Father.
Yes, Major Joplo.
The facts are that the Americans have invaded Adano. The enemy has been pushed back, and I think we have very little to fear from any counterattack. We are strong here. The fighting is over.
Thank God.
But less than an hour ago, I landed here and I walked through the streets to this building. I saw the filth of the town, the poverty in which the people have been living. I'm told that some have had no food for 3 days. I want to change all that, Father. I want the hungry to be fed. I want the sick to be well. I want the filth to be clean. I want to make Adano shine.
I think maybe you will, my son.
Yes, but to do that, I must have the goodwill of the people, because they are the ones who will have to do it. You see, Father, this town has been a fascist town for so long, I am not sure the people will understand what we mean when we say that it's now going to be run as a democracy. Perhaps they don't know exactly what a democracy is. I would like to make them understand that one of the main things about a democracy is that the men of the government are no longer the masters of the people. That they are the servants of the people, elected by the people, paid by the people with their taxes. I want them to understand that I, too, am their servant, and that the graft and the corruption they have been under will no longer be a part of their government. Now, if we can make them understand a few of these simple things about democracy, perhaps we'll be able to earn their goodwill.
You are getting it already. Look, the crowd is rapidly growing larger down there.
I've been told that you are the best priest in Adano, Father. Therefore, I should like to ask a favor of you. But please, feel perfectly free to refuse me if you wish.
I will not refuse you.
I should like you to say a few words to these people about the Americans. I shall leave it to you to say what you wish. If you'll be so good as to point out that the Americans are about to post certain proclamations which ought to be read.
That I can easily do.
I think they're quite simple. They just try to explain that Americans are different from fascists, and so there'll be some changes here in Adana. And these changes must be adhered to. Now, they'll be posted before 5 o'clock this afternoon.
I will tell them now.
Paula, I can assure you that the Americans want to bring only good to this town. But, as in every country, there are some bad men in America. Now, it's possible that some of the Americans who come here will do bad things. But if they do, I can tell you that most of the Americans will be just as ashamed of those things as you are annoyed by them.
I think we will understand weakness in your men, just as we try to understand it in our own.
Thank you, Father.
I will step out on the balcony and tell them. I have a word to say to you on this occasion, my children. Everything that is done in this world is done by God. God gave us bread, and God gave us the sun. God has now given us deliverance from our oppressors. Our prayers are answered, and the men we feared are now in the hills, which God, in his infinite forgiveness, gave them to hide in. The Americans are here now, but as you all know, no matter who you have as the authority, you must obey the law. When you go about this town this evening, read the proclamation which your new governors will have posted, and spread the word that all must obey them exactly as they are written. If you remember, we were told that Americans attacked priests and attacked and killed women. But right here now is an American in charge of Adano. He is not attacking priests. He is not killing women. I have talked with him, and I feel that he is here with only one idea: to feed you, to clothe you, to make you free. Do you know what he said to me? He said, "I want to make Adano shine." If Americans are like this, we will be very glad to have them here. Because of this man, I believe that Americans are going to be my friends. You must believe the same thing, my children.
Thank you, Father. Thank you very much.
And now I must be about my duty. Good day, my son.
Good day, Father.
All right, boss. What are you waiting for? For God's sake, let's get started.
Okay, Doogie.
And so ends the first scene of A Bell for Adano, which eventually leads to the solution of Major Joppolo's problems in bringing democracy to Adano, the gradual realization of the townspeople that he is their friend, and Joppolo's and Adano's final tragedy, mitigated only by his rewarded efforts to secure a bell for Adano. Thank you, Frederick March and cast, for an inspired performance. Now, let's do a bit of supposing. Suppose you have plenty of red points to buy meat with, and suppose when you get to the market, your butcher not only has a wide choice of meats on hand, but has exactly the cut and kind of meat you want for next Sunday's dinner. But it's only Monday. So there you are with the necessary red points and the meat right in sight, but almost a week to go before you plan to serve it. Well, that might take a lot of joy out of life, unless you have a Philco refrigerator. If you have a Philco, one of those Philcos built just before the war, everything is just as pleasant as it sounds. You buy the meat, take it home, pop it into the frozen food compartment of your Philco, and look forward with pleasure to a fine dinner next Sunday. For your Philco will freeze that meat, keep it perfectly all week, and Sunday you'll sit down to a meal that will bring back memories of pre-rationing days.
Thousands of Philco owners are doing that, or something similar to it, right now. When Philco starts making refrigerators again, thousands more will enjoy this great Philco service. Just one of dozens of outstanding conveniences which you'll see when Philco refrigerators are again displayed on your Philco dealer's floor. Your Radio Hall of Fame will continue after station identification. Is the Blue Network. You're listening to your Radio Hall of Fame, and this week the stars made great by your recognition of their achievements and brought to you by Philco Corporation include Frederick March, Victor Borga, Georgia Gibbs, and Paul Whiteman. On December 7th, 1844, lacking 4 days of 100 years ago, a young man of 18 named Stephen Collins Foster copyrighted his very first song. This was but the first of many songs, tender, somber, or spirited, which have won for him and his music a permanent place in memory's Hall of Fame. They were simple tunes that vibrated sympathetically to the simple soul of the America of his day, and America loved him. America still loves him. And loves them. Foster's eternal monument is in the affectionate regard his countrymen feel for the compositions fathered by his prolific genius. Songs such as the ones you hear now as Paul Whiteman, the orchestra and chorus, pay tribute to the lyrical gift of Stephen Collins Foster.
Camptown ladies sing this song, do-da, do-da. The Camptown racetrack 5 mile long, oh, do-da day.
I come down here with a hat cape in, do-da, do-da. I go back home with a pocket full of tin, oh, do-da day. I'd run all night, I'd run all day. I bet my money on a bobtail leg, somebody bet on the bay.
I'm for a sea. When it rains on that day, I guess the weather is so dry. The sun so hot, so down, and I don't know why.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've enjoyed as much as I have the performance of Victor Borga, Georgia Gibbs, Paul Whiteman, the orchestra and chorus, and Everett Sloan, Gilbert Mack, Tito Vuolo, Silvio Minciotti, Joe Verdi, Bruce McFarlane, and Leon Rothier, the cast of Abel Ferrandano. Before I go, may I say something which I feel very deeply. A piece of paper, little, but big as a man's mind, big enough to hold a house and the people in it, and a woman's smile, and a baby's cry, and a mother's step, and a made-over dress, and an apple pie, and a laughing brook, and a field edged with trees, and heaps of russet leaves, and the tangy air of autumn, and a movie at the Bijou, and a soda at Liggett's. You wouldn't think a piece of paper, a little piece of paper, would be big enough to hold all that, but it is. Any letter to a soldier is. I know, ladies and gentlemen, that you've been asked on this program previously to write letters to your soldiers. But I talked to a lot of the boys when I was overseas, and I know how important mail is to them. So I know you'll forgive my again urging this upon you. And now this is Frederick March seeing you to the door of your Radio Hall of Fame, leaving Glenn Riggs to issue a few final instructions.
If your community is lagging behind in its quota in the sixth war loan, and you still haven't bought your extra war bond, you have a decision to make that you can't escape. At least one extra war bond, over and above your regular purchases, will put you in the clear. Buy it this week, without fail, from your Victory volunteer. Next Sunday, your Radio Hall of Fame, which will originate from Hollywood, honors these stars made great by your recognition of their achievements. The first citizen of Van Buren, Arkansas, Bob Burns, George Murphy, Gloria DeHaven, Carlos Ramirez, Jimmy Wallington, and others. And now, this is Glenn Riggs speaking for Philco and inviting you to join the reception committee next week and welcome these initiates into your Radio Hall of Fame. This is the Blue Network.